Welcome to this week's episode of Dead America. I'm Ed Waters, your host, and this week we are going to dive into the subject of backbone by encroachments. What does that mean? First of all, let's define encroachment.
So what is encroachment? Encroachment, intrusion on a person's territory, rights, etc. Minor encroachments on our individual liberties. Intrusion into, trespass on, invasion of, infiltration of, incursion into, obtrusion into, overrunning of, usurping of, appropriation of. These are synonyms of encroachment. Very important to understand what encroachment is before we can really dive in and fix what is being done to us by our government in the name of justice.
Now that we've got encroachment defined,
let's really dive in and take a look here.
The very nation that you and I call home today, known as the United States of America, well, it was founded on encroachments. Encroachments were in America before America even existed as we know it, the United States of America. A constitutional form of government was established out of encroachments. Over 10 years of established struggles united men on a general cause to build a greater nation, formed on a more perfect union of ideas, principles, and boundaries set upon a governed body of individuals entrusted with the honorary duties outlined within the preamble of the Constitution of the United States. Let's have us a listen to what the preamble says within the Constitution.
We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America.
Before we go on from here, I want to break that preamble down just a little bit more, because this is one of the most important areas of our whole Constitution, and people overlook this area. The preamble of the Constitution, within its framework, it outlines five duties that your government has. The United States government is ordained with five duties. What are they? Number one, to establish justice. Number two, to ensure domestic tranquility. Number three, provide for the common defense. Number four, promote the general welfare. And number five, secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. That is very important to understand, because that is the whole purpose of the Constitution and the framework that was outlined within the body of this document. It is not to control the people. It is to control and to outline the duties of our government. We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. Very powerful words with a lot of meaning. Now that we understand a little bit more about the preamble of the Constitution, I want to look back before this great document was established. Have you ever heard of Pontiac's War? Let's get into that just a little bit here. So let's get an overview of who Pontiac was. Pontiac's uprising demonstrated the viability of pan-tribal cooperation in the struggle against European-American territorial expansionism and contributed to the deterioration of relations between Great Britain and its North American colonies. At the end of the French and Indian War, France abandoned its outpost at Fort Detroit in what is present-day Michigan. The British took control of Fort Detroit and imposed a number of changes that dissatisfied the various Native American tribes that inhabited the Great Lakes region and had allied with France. For instance, whereas the French had respected Native American traditions and had traded freely with the tribes, the British did not seem to care about maintaining good relations with the Native Americans and restricted their ability to trade. The Native Americans had grown accustomed to hunting with weapons and ammunition supplied by the French. But when the British took control of the area, they refused to provide arms to the Native Americans, which had a negative effect on their ability to hunt. British attitudes and actions provoked the distrust and hostility of the tribes in the area, many of which banded together to resist the future encroachment of the British onto their lands. In May 1763, Pontiac led a force of 300 members of different tribes in an attack on Fort Detroit, attempting to take it from the British. The British commander, however, of the fort learned of Pontiac's plan and managed to hold the fort and put an end to Pontiac's siege. Native American resistance spread, and soon Pontiac had tripled his force. Moreover, other Native American tribes launched attacks on British settlements and military outposts, managing to capture 8 of the 11 British forts in the Ohio Valley. On July 25th, 1766, Pontiac and British Superintendent of Indian Affairs negotiated an end to the war. Though the Native Americans were unable to kick the British out of the Great Lakes region, the uprising demonstrated the viability of a pan-tribal cooperation in the struggle against European-American colonialism. The British government issued the Royal Proclamation of 1763. Drawing a boundary line in the Appalachian Mountains and forbidding colonists from settling the lands west of the line, which were designated Indian Territory. The British hoped to neutralize conflict between white settlers and Native Americans, but they ended up provoking the wrath of the colonists, who cited the Proclamation of 1763 as one of the grievances leading to the American Revolutionary War. Before we carry on from here, let's take a little bit deeper look at this proclamation and the proclamation line and what was the great controversy behind it. Let's look into this. The Proclamation of 1763 dealt with the management of inherited French colonies from the French and Indian War, as well as regulating colonial expansion. It established new governments for four areas: the province of Quebec, the new colonies of West Florida and East Florida, and Grenada. The proclamation created a boundary line, often called the Proclamation Line, between the British colonies on the Atlantic coast and the American Indian lands called the Indian Reserve, west of the Appalachian Mountains. The Proclamation Line was not intended to be a permanent boundary between the colonies and the aboriginal lands, but rather a temporary boundary which could be extended further west in an orderly, lawful manner. It was also not designed as an uncrossable boundary. People could cross the line, just not settle past it. Its contour was defined by the headwaters that form the watershed along the Appalachians. All land with rivers that flowed into the Atlantic was designated for the colonial entities, while the land with rivers that flowed into the Mississippi was reserved for the native Indian population. The proclamation outlawed the private purchase of Native American land, which had often created problems in the past. Instead, all future land purchases were to be made by Crown officials at some public meeting or assembly of the said Indians. Furthermore, British colonials were forbidden to settle on Native lands, and colonial officials were forbidden to grant ground or lands without royal approval. The proclamation gave the Crown a monopoly on all future land purchases from the American Indians. British colonists and land speculators objected to the proclamation boundary, since the British government had already assigned land grants to them. Many settlements already existed beyond the proclamation line, some of which had been temporarily evacuated during the Pontiac's War, and there were many already granted land claims yet to be settled. For example, George Washington and his Virginia soldiers had been granted land past the boundary. Prominent American colonials joined with the land speculators in Britain to lobby the government to move the line further west. Their demands were met, and the boundary line was adjusted. In a series of treaties with the Native Americans in 1768, the Treaty of Fort Stanwix and the Treaty of Hard Labor, followed in 1770 by the Treaty of Lochaber, opened much of what is now Kentucky and West Virginia to British settlement. A new map was drawn up at the Treaty of Fort Stanwix in 1768 that move the line from the green line to the red line on the map, much further to the west, and gave lands claimed to the colonists to the British side. I am going to have a copy of this map where you can look at it on deadamerica.website under this episode heading, Backbone by Encroachments. Go over to deadamerica.website and check out the map. Some see the Royal Proclamation of 1763 as a fundamental document for First Nations land claims and self-government. It is the first legal recognition by the British Crown of Aboriginal rights and imposes a fiduciary duty of care on the Crown. The intent and the promises made to the native in the proclamation have been argued to be of a temporary nature, only meant to appease the native peoples who were becoming increasingly resentful of settler encroachments on their lands, and were capable of becoming a serious threat to British colonial settlement. Some historians believe that the British were trying to convince native people that there was nothing to fear from the colonists, while at the same time trying to increase political and economic power relative to the First Nations and other European powers. Others argue that the Royal Proclamation, along with the subsequent Treaty of Nigeria, provide for an argument that discredits the claims of the Crown to exercise sovereignty over First Nations and affirms Aboriginal powers of self-determination in, among other things, allocating lands. The influence of the Royal Proclamation of 1763 on the coming of the American Revolution has been variously interpreted. Many historians argue that the proclamation ceased to be a major source of tension after 1768. Since the aforementioned treaties opened up extensive lands for settlement, others have argued that the colonial resentment of the proclamation contributed to the growing divide between the colonies and the mother country. Some historians argue that even though the boundary was pushed west in subsequent treaties, the British government refused to permit new colonial settlements for fear of igniting a war with Native Americans, which angered colonial land speculators. Others argued that the Royal Proclamation imposed a fiduciary duty of care on the Crown. In the United States, the Royal Proclamation of 1763 ended with the American Revolutionary War because Great Britain ceded the land in question to the United States in the Treaty of Paris, 1783. Afterward, the U.S. government also faced difficulties in preventing frontier violence and eventually adopted policies similar to those of the Royal Proclamation, the first in a series of Indian Intercourse Acts was passed, 1790, prohibiting unregulated trade and travel in Native American lands. In 1823, the U.S. Supreme Court case Johnson versus Emmintosh established that only the U.S. government and not private individuals could purchase land from Native Americans. In October 2013, the 250th anniversary of the Royal Proclamation was celebrated in Ottawa with a meeting of Indian leaders and Governor General David Johnson. The Aboriginal movement, Idle No More, held birthday parties for this monumental document at various locations across Canada. Roads to Revolution. Between 1764 and 1775, 13 British colonies in North America, each of them started down their own road to revolution against the British Empire. As John Adams recalled, the colonies were so different in their government, religions, and customs, and had so little to do with each other, that to unite them in the same principles, in theory, and the same system of action would be an extraordinary feat. Yet, the radical changes in the political, economic, and social dimensions of transatlantic life wrought by the end of the Seven-Year War would do just that, bringing Americans and Britons alike to new senses of the meaning of liberty and equality. The Stamp Act of 1765. It was the first direct tax ever imposed by the British government on the colonial Americans. Inadvertently, it provoked a 10-year clash of wills between Britain and the colonies that led to the American Revolutionary War. During this revolutionary crisis period between 1765 and 1775, the colonies resisted imperial taxes and other parliamentary innovations with protests and with boycotts of British goods called non-importation agreements. Britain's Parliament passed the Stamp Act on March 22, 1765, to offset the huge debt amassed during the recent Seven-Year War. The British government intended the Stamp Act to defray the cost of defending, protecting, and securing the British colonies and plantations in America. The terms of the act required colonies to purchase special paper from the designated commissioners for a wide variety of legal and business transactions, varying from court pleadings and wills to newspapers and gaming cards. Contracts written on other than stamped paper were null and void, and counterfeiting the stamp was deemed a capital offense. The British government seriously underestimated the anger this law would provoke. Colonial patriots argued that cooperation with the law, which imposed taxation without American representation in Parliament, was akin to accepting economic slavery. Major riots occurred in Boston and New York City. Colonial legislators and newspapers issued strongly worded protests. A German language press in Germantown encouraged readers to resist the unbearable Stamp Act. Everywhere, angry mobs targeted royal officials. The constitutional current called American-born men who would cooperate with such an act, the vipers of humankind and the worst parasites. In October 1765, 9 of the 13 colonies sent representatives to a Stamp Act Congress in New York City to draft a unified protest. The 1765 Stamp Act proved to be a failure. Mobs ultimately forced all the stamp distributors to resign. Not one of the 13 colonies collected a shilling from the tax, and the boycott worsened England's already depressed economy the act was repealed within a year. When news of the repeal reached Philadelphia on May 19, 1766, large crowds drank to the health of King George III. In May 1767, the British Parliament again tried to tax the American colonies, prompting a second round of protest and non-importation agreements. While response to the Stamp Act had been immediate and spontaneous, resistance to the Townsend duties was not. Philadelphia's merchant community remained divided, both because many of the wealthier merchants wished to try to obtain repeal of the duties quietly through their contacts with England merchant houses, and also because merchants trading primarily in manufacturing British goods, dry goods and such, stood to be much more heavily affected by the terms of the boycott than those housed trading primarily with the West Indies in the wet goods. Many, many more atrocities occurred throughout the colonies before the people of the colonies finally said, enough is enough. And they grew a backbone. They started a revolution. The episode today is to bring up this encroachment that has been building in America for quite some time. Before I was even born, these encroachments were happening. And encroachments keep on building. This government was made to be a limited government to support the people in the very five basic areas that we talked about earlier in this episode during the preamble to the Constitution. The Constitution is clear. It defines five specific duties that our government should be upholding for the people. It states, we the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. It's clear, it's defined, it's outlined in the Constitution. The people are starting to grow a backbone to all the encroachments, and we really have to be careful in this day and age. There are people meeting in back rooms discussing all of the encroachments. There are people doing nefarious deals in order to subvert the law of the land. Remember, the supreme law of the land is the Constitution. It's a binding document that binds all of us together on unique principles and very defined duties that we allow. And that's what binds our country together. People build backbones against encroachments. And that is what this episode is all about. We are under encroachment. We must start talking. And remember, the Constitution itself has the means of repairing the wrongs of a tyrannical government. There are methods penned years ago for posterity to adhere to ensure that everybody is treated equally, fairly, with justice for all. And that's the beauty of the Constitution, my friends. When encroachments get the people riled up to where they get a backbone, you must be aware of everything going on around you. The people are not anti-government, but the government can be anti-people. Let's remember that. Join us next week, because we've got a real ringer in the works for next week. Ever hear of Ruby Ridge? Waco, Texas? The Oklahoma City bombing? We're going to discuss these things and more next week right here on Dead America. And soon, I'm going to be taking to the streets again, opening up the phone lines for conversation. Let's start talking before backbones are built by encroachment to the point of an armed revolution. We do not need that. There are already laws on the books and ways to amend the Constitution. And remember, it's not only your right, it is your duty to stand up to tyranny. America and all of its principles depend on you. I'm Ed Waters, Dead America. Until next week, I will see you later. Make sure you share, like, and subscribe to Dead America Podcast.